full breakdown of Ohio State, Texas on today's edition of the College Football Power Hour. Welcome into the College Football Power Hour. He's Adam Brenneman. That's Jason Fitz. And I am Caroline Fenton. And the national championship is set. Ohio State and Notre Dame will face off for the opportunity to win the first expanded college football playoff national championship in Atlanta after Ohio State took down Texas 28-14 in the Cotton Bowl. We've seen pre-Cotton Bowl, Ohio State has absolutely obliterated both of the teams that they have seen in the most difficult path in the college football playoff. Obliterated Tennessee, put up 250 yards in the first quarter alone. Did to Oregon what nobody even came close to doing. They were up 35-0 at one point in the second quarter. Ohio State, in those first two games of the college football playoff, was an absolute buzzsaw. It wasn't the blowout that maybe people expected, and it wasn't the blowout that we saw in the first 2 weeks of the college football playoff from Ohio State. It was gritty. It was grinded out. Every single yard and every single point was hard to come by, and that is credit and all the credit in the world to Texas's defense for limiting Jeremiah Smith and that Ohio State offense more than anyone has been able to do so far in the college football playoff. But every time Texas was able to keep it close, when they scored, they tied it up 7-7 a couple minutes before half. Texas blitzes a corner, and Will Howard finds Travion Henderson for a 75-yard touchdown. Just when we think in the fourth quarter, when Texas is able to tie it up, or we think able to tie it up 21-all, just a few minutes left in the game, strip sack Jack Sawyer to the end zone, pretty much puts this game on ice. So Ohio State wins it. A little bit more gritty than it was pretty, Adam, but it's a win nonetheless.
Yeah, I told everyone on social media and on here that one of these games would be a tight defensive slugfest, and no one believed it would be this one out of the two semifinal games. And I was getting a lot of trash for that. So I was happy to see a low-scoring game in the first half, at least, at least a tighter slugfest. And, you know, Texas did a good job of neutralizing Jeremiah Smith. And I thought Texas's secondary going into this was going to have a chance to really keep this game close. The difference is that, you know, Texas took a formula out of that Michigan playbook and erased Smith completely off the field. But the difference is Ohio State has their other skilled players who would be starters at most of the playoff teams that were even in this thing in the first place. Carnell Tate, Emeka Buka, Travion Henderson all had huge days. So I think that was really the name of the game, is Ohio State had those other players that could make plays. You know, both defenses played really good in this game, and it's cool that it ends, as you mentioned, Caroline, with a Jack Sawyer strip sack on his former roommate, Quinn Ewers, to go 90 yards and a win. And that is the kind of moment, as he was running down the sideline with the ball live, I was thinking in my head, like, this is a legendary Ohio State play. This is the type of play that gets you remembered for generations as an Ohio guy from the state of Ohio. And he's earned himself some money in this playoff run. Last thing is, let's give Ryan Day some credit for getting his team ready for an unbelievable stretch in the playoffs. Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and now Notre Dame, if he pulls it off, will be the most unheard of four-game win streak in college football history, if they can finish the job. And everyone was calling for Day's head in Columbus after that Michigan game. They will be silenced if he can win four straight year and win the national title. It is one thing to collect talent. It's an entirely different thing to bring them together to win. And Ryan Day's brought some talent in, kept his talent on that roster, and has them playing as well as any team we've seen in college football in a while.
I mean, think about this. Like, to your point, we've referenced it many times. Nick Saban earlier this year on game day saying, you know, if you spend the money on the wrong people, you're out of luck, right? Like, things get bad. You look at the way this Ohio State playoff run has gone, money well spent. NIL money well put out there, you know? And there is part of this is right. I will push back a little bit on one thing here. Let's be honest here. In the first quarter, we all thought this was about to be a blowout. It was a stupid penalty that stifled the second drive for Ohio State. It was a stupid penalty that stopped the third drive. Like, Ohio State was doing whatever the hell they wanted in the first quarter, and it looked like Will Howard, being patient particularly, was absolutely destroying Texas. I'll give Texas credit for all the adjustments. From the second quarter on, this was a slugfest and a great game. In the first quarter, it felt to me like we were about to get Tennessee and Oregon all over again. I mean, were it not for just a dumb, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty after a big first down, or I should say a dumb unsportsmanlike penalty that caused a long second down there. Ohio State's going in and scoring on their second drive. This game's 14-0. And then on the next drive, looked like they were going to score in a stupid head penalty. Like, the number of times it looked like Ohio State was just going to slap Texas around, it calmed down and became a great game. But in the beginning, I thought Ohio State was going to do this again. I think Ohio State, when they're firing on all cylinders, is one of the scariest teams we've ever seen. I don't know how you shut them down if they don't shut themselves down early in that game.
The reason why I think they're so scary is exactly what you just said. They had 9 penalties for 75 yards. And if I'm counting correctly, at least 6 of those penalties were total and complete drive killers. Ohio State punted 7 times in this game, which is not something that we've seen over the last couple of games in the college football playoff. I know it was different in the regular season, but Ohio State, I think, is more what we've seen over the last 2 weeks than what we saw against Michigan. So it was the silly, stupid, avoidable penalties, at least 2 unsportsmanlike penalties that completely killed drives. And it was Jeremiah Smith being completely shut down.
To get 1 for 3. One catch, three yards.
Was doubled all game long. And the one time that Will Howard really tried to force it to Jeremiah Smith, he got picked off. So yeah. Their best receiver completely shut down. Stupid penalties. They struggled to run the football, only 3.5 yards a crack. Yet they still find a way to win because they don't need just Jeremiah Smith to take over the football game. Jeremiah Smith's taken out. Well, that's fine. We've got 2 more future NFL wide receivers that can carry the load.
The most important stat in this entire game is that Carnell Tate, Emeka Ibuka, and G. Scott combined for 17 catches.
Yeah.
That's what won Ohio State the game. The fact that if you would have told me going into this that Jeremiah Smith has 1 catch for 3 yards, I would have said this looks like a Texas win if Jeremiah Smith is neutralized that much. So, I mean, those guys stepping up was really big for Ohio State. And I'll say this, when they needed him the most, Will Howard delivered his very best in the playoff. I mean, 289 yards, had a touchdown. Completed passes to 7 or 8 different receivers. Great job distributing the football. He's so poised back there. He's confident. You can tell he's a guy who's played so much college football. My favorite thing with Will Howard, and I've said this before on the show, I love his passion. The one thing I hate to see lost in the transfer portal is the love for the place you're playing. And you can tell how much Will Howard loves Ohio State and his teammates by how he handles himself. You know, on the sideline when he's talking to his guys, when Jack Sawyer comes off the sideline after scoring, Will Howard's the very first one there. And I thought Will Howard also made some big plays with his legs. You know, I think I predicted a long touchdown run by Will Howard. Didn't happen, but he had a big one, but got tripped up, you know, at the last second. Regardless of that, he made some big time plays with his legs in the fourth quarter to extend the pivotal drive that Ohio State had. So I thought Will Howard played really, really well. And, you know, he had somewhat of an up and down, some up and down moments in the season. Overall played well, but he played his very best when his best was needed against Texas.
Well, I think he also did a really smart job of, you know, one of the coach-isms, but Nick Saban always told his Alabama guys, take what the defense will give you. Eventually, the defense will give you the game, right? Will Howard took what the defense was going to give him over and over. I mean, this Jeremiah Smith thing wasn't accidental. It's just when you've got great, and to your point, Adam, their second and third weapons would be number one guys on teams all over the country. When those guys are wide open underneath because of the way that they're playing Jeremiah Smith, all of a sudden, if you're a quarterback that's just willing to be patient, death by 1,000 cuts. I thought the best part of Will Howard's game, frankly, throughout the course of this, is that he was willing to just say, all right, this is open. We'll move forward 8 yards. Like those drives I referenced in the first quarter that were so successful were long drives with a lot of plays. Like this was kind of the opposite of Oregon. They weren't trying to pick up 30 yards of play. They're saying, hey, if you'll give me 7 yards with a great wide receiver, I'll take it. And we'll just go first down, second down, all the way down the field.
And Carol, I want to echo something you said because the biggest turning point in this game, the biggest one, was the screen pass to Trayvon Henderson before half. That was a wild play, championship-level play. Texas had just tied the game up, was rolling into the locker room with all the momentum in the world, and Ohio State rips a one-play, 75-yard drive, 75-yard slip screen, and called it at the perfect time. The corner blitz, they ran the screen pass right into a corner blitz. Could not have been called more perfectly. And then the coolest part was to see the Ohio State lineman running in space, getting some blocks on the perimeter down the field. That's a big man's dream when you can run and hit some corners and some safeties. So that play changed the game to me. That was where Ohio State really won the game.
Can we also credit the fact that Will Howard had to wait just a split second to throw that ball? I was stunned. That meant that the offensive lineman had to wait. Like, we see plays like that all the time. You get an illegal man downfield, right? Like an eligible receiver downfield. The lineman had to hold for an extra second before they released. I thought that was just perfect execution by the fat guys and by Will Howard. That was a brilliant play.
It was hilarious and brilliantly done by the broadcast team, because once that touchdown happened, they didn't show the Ohio State sideline. They didn't show Ohio State fans or Ohio State players celebrating in the end zone. They just ripped off like six or seven consecutive shots of sad Texas fans. And it was so perfect, because I think it's so perfectly articulated just the energy that was just completely let out of that Texas fan base, and probably that Texas sideline too. It was like surrender, Cobra, and then a Texas fan just covering his eyes like no. Like, it was just in the perfect way to show, like, okay, Texas fans were feeling it. Texas fans probably at this point maybe had just like a sliver of fear or doubt that they could have gotten completely blown out in the first quarter alone, and now they're feeling themselves. It's a tie game. They've got all the momentum going into the locker room, and then boom, they got Travion Henderson. But to that point, I think that pass catching running backs were kind of the MVP of the day on both sidelines. Like, Trey Wisner and Jaden Blue for Texas combined for 11 catches for 100 yards. And then you add in that Travion Henderson reception. Like, when the running backs couldn't run the football, I think there were, 100 yards and some change total on the ground for both teams combined. The running back showed up in a huge way in the passing game.
Yeah, there was a clip that was circulating on social media that I just watched right before this of Steve Sarkisian talking about using the running backs in the passing game. And it was just really cool, because he saw it in action here, and he was talking about how the most underrated weapon in the passing game is the running back. That no one's actually thinking about covering the running back. And so many coaches, and I've been around many of them, just think that the running back should be used as the six blocker and six man protection, and they should just run some flat routes. And Sarkisian's like, why do they have to run flat routes? Why do we have to keep them in the like, put them on a wheel route, put them on a rail route. No one's actually thinking about covering that running back. And we saw it perfectly. And then Ohio State did the same thing. I think Quinshon Judkins had a couple catches as well that were big for first downs. Trevor Henderson with his screen, obviously. I think you know, being able to use those running backs, and back to Ohio State, Chip Kelly and how he just used formations and moved his guys around and got Cardell Tate and Emeka Buka touches, how he used his running backs, I've been so impressed with how Chip Kelly has evolved that offense throughout the season. And you've seen week after week after week that it's become more about players than plays for Chip Kelly. And I think against Michigan, it was very much about how do we play Ohio State football? How do we get physical and run the ball downhill? How do we show that we're tougher than everybody else? And then since then, they've kind of said, screw that, and let's use our players who are the best players in the country. And then you add on top of that, the thing that can't be overlooked is that Ohio State's offensive line played really well too. And it wasn't perfect throughout the season, but impressive work to have nearly 25 different O-line combinations on the year and still find a way to make it work, still find a way to win a bunch of games and now be in the college football national championship. So really hard to plug and play guys on the offensive line. Like, that's one of the hardest things to do. We all know that. Hardest thing is to replace offensive linemen because of the communication piece. And Ohio State found a way to do it. So credit to Ryan Day and Chip Kelly.
I want to look into the final few plays for Texas. Just you know, pick them apart a little bit. Let's throw the interception, the Quinn Ewers interception, on that true final drive. The drive where they had the ball, so it's 3rd-and-3 at Ohio State 6. Then Texas gets back to, or Ohio State rather, gets back-to-back PIs in the end zone. So now Texas has a fresh set of downs at the Ohio State 1. They run it with Jarrett Gibson at the 1-yard line, which I have no issue with that. You run it with a big man. I get it. I understand it. You don't get it. It's a good defense, especially whenever they have to protect, you know, a single yard. 2nd-and-goal at the 1. And it's a toss sweep to Trey Wisner for a loss of 7. Now it's 3rd-and-goal at the Ohio State 8. Adam, walk me through why you would run that play on second and goal at the one when you have Arch Manning on the sideline, who's kind of been your go-to guy in those short yardage goal line situations all year long. I know it's easy for me to be, you know, an armchair play caller and for me yeah. to second guess things whenever we already know the results. But when it was happening, I'm thinking, what, like,
yeah.
Why is that the decision here?
I thought it was a terrible call. And I'm a big believer that when you're on the goal line, when you're inside the 3-yard line, your two options are either downhill or play action. And you get your quarterback on the perimeter. And if you're going to run outside, it should be your quarterback running the ball outside, not a toss sweep to your running back. And then I think what coaches also have to realize is that every play, while you may have a play that you think is going to work, you have to assess the risk of that play as well, especially in the given situation. And any play where, one, the ball is leaving the quarterback's hand on a run play, and any play where the running back actually has to run backwards a little bit, is a high-risk play, similar to like a jet sweep, similar to any kind of reverse. It's a risky play because, yes, if it works, you're scoring a touchdown, and you probably have seen it on film that it's going to work. But if it doesn't work, it's not a loss of one like it would be if you ran out the middle. It's a loss of 6, 7, and what was it, 8 in this case, and puts you completely in a bad spot at 3rd down and 8 on the Ohio State 8-yard line. So for Sark, I mean, they definitely saw something on film and said, if we can get, you know, Ohio State loads the box, Jim Knowles going to play cover 0, the ball has to go on the perimeter, going to run the football. I would have much rather in that situation seen a quarterback run, or get your quarterback on the perimeter, maybe it's Arch Manning, put him on the perimeter and give him an option to throw the football to a tight end in the corner, running back in the flat, or run the ball yourself. If you're going to run on the perimeter, I'd rather it be a quarterback who has an option to also throw the ball in that situation. So I think it was a bad call. Clearly it was, with hindsight 2020, but you have to think about the risk of any play. And the riskiest plays running the football are on the perimeter, toss plays, jet sweeps, because you have the chance for a big tackle for loss. Unlike if you just hand the ball off in the middle. If you hand the ball off the middle, it's going to be a 1 or 2 yard loss if it gets stuffed. If your quarterback is doing it, he can throw the football away. So then you're 3rd down and 1 on the Ohio State one, right? If it doesn't go well. So I think the thing that Sark has to look in the mirror and say, he put his team in a tough spot with that play call.
And y'all keep saying hindsight's 20/20. The one thing I'd say about that is I don't know that you needed hindsight to know that that play wasn't going to work. Ohio State's defensive line finished that game with 9 tackles for loss. All right, we saw Ohio State absolutely swarming defensively. I don't like running the football out to the left or the right and asking for, you know, a speed defense that's absolutely dominating me right now at the line of scrimmage. You're just presuming that they're not going to break through and make that play. I think, yes, hindsight's 20/20 is the right thing for us to say because we're trying to be polite here. But I think if you look at the game flow and the way it's going, a head coach's job is to have feel, right? And so Sark, as a play caller, is known for his feel. That's bad feel right there, because all of us watching it thought the same thing. What the hell are you doing it, right? Like, there is a moment where we were surprised, but Ohio State wasn't, and a defense that had been absolutely controlling speed and tempo for much of the game, what they do? They knocked that play down for a loss. Like, I think hindsight 2020 is being way too kind and forgiving on Sark for a bad play call.
That's fair. It was a bad play call, and it was a stupid play call, and it was a bad feel in the most critical point in the game. When you have the opportunity to tie it up in the final few minutes of the game, and you are at the 1-yard line, and some of that has been gifted to you by a couple of PI calls in the end zone, like, you have to have the feel. And Sark, as I think, one of the most brilliant play callers in all of college football, cannot afford to make that kind of mistake in that kind of situation. Because what I thought was going to be, I think probably everyone in the stadium and everyone watching at home thought it was going to be 21-21, tied up, Ohio State gets the ball back with the opportunity to win it, now all of a sudden becomes 28-14 when Jack Sawyer sacks Quinn Ewers, picks it up, runs it, 83 yards for a touchdown, essentially puts that game on ice, and it was really over whenever Quinn Ewers throws an interception on that next possession with about 1:45 left. So that was the difference. It was the difference between tie game and then 2-score game. Ohio State wins it 28-14. We'll wrap up our final thoughts with a little bit of Power Hour, Power House, and Power Hour, Power Outage on the other side. All right, Power Hour, Power House. Fitz, who gets yours for the Cotton Bowl?
I'll piggyback on the conversation we were just having. I would give it to the entire Ohio State defensive line. To me, the biggest key in this game we haven't talked a lot about was pressure from both sides. When they were able to apply pressure on the quarterbacks, everything shut down on both sides. And Ohio State's defensive line is just, as much as we want to talk about how great that offense looks, I think part of this conversation has to be their defensive line is absolutely ferocious. It's disruptive. They are destroying their opponents week in and week out. They're getting at you from multiple different people on the position. I give a collective award to the fat guys on the defensive line, Adam. I thought they really showed up.
Yeah, I'll go with my power hour powerhouse as Jim Knowles and the Ohio State defensive staff, similar to you, Fitz. This might be the best job of talent development in the country. And when people hear the $20 million roster line about Ohio State, they likely assume it means a lot of defense, but it doesn't. And the only player they added is Caleb Downs on their defense. Really the only one. Everyone else is developed at Ohio State. They simply develop elite pass rushers at Ohio State. And credit to their defensive line coach, Larry Johnson. JTT went down for a couple series, no issue. Their third, fourth, fifth pass rusher right in there. Another four sacks in this game for Ohio State. Their stretch of getting after the quarterback in the playoff in these few games is one of the best in college football history, the way their defense has played. And you can feel that this is year three in the Jim Knowles system at Ohio State, and they develop that talent. And they play with really, they almost play with like a string on their back. And you can, it feels like Jim Knowles is controlling everybody, right? Like lining up the chess pieces every single play. They communicate so well. And this comes down to developing trust with your coach, not being a roster full of guys who have been there for 1 year and don't know each other, don't know their coach. They've been recruiting to fit this system specifically at Ohio State, and it all came together defensively for this playoff run. So I want to give a lot of credit to Jim Knowles and what he's done at Ohio State.
I have two power hour powerhouses. One goes to Jack Sawyer. Obviously, he makes, the game-ending play, a massive play, big-time play, national championship kind of play. But it's more so because the last lasting image that at least I have of Jack Sawyer is him bull rushing the Michigan players trying to plant a Michigan flag at the 50-yard line in the horseshoe, and him getting pepper sprayed and getting into a fight at midfield at the end of that Michigan game. Like, I know that Jack Sawyer is Ohio State through and through. He bleeds Ohio State. He loves that university. He loves this team, and he was just trying to protect the a little bit of integrity, a little bit of dignity at the end of that Michigan game. But nonetheless, it was a bad look. Now, at least for now, we still have a national championship game to play. But for now, the lasting image I have of Jack Sawyer is making that play of him running down the sideline, of Ryan Day pumping his fist and the entire sideline going crazy, all of the fans going crazy because of what Jack Sawyer did. So it felt like a little, I don't want to say revenge because that's not the word, but it felt like a little bit of a character arc moment for Jack Sawyer. And it was really kind of a microcosm for this Ohio State team as a whole. The lowest of lows losing to Michigan to now the highest of highs, beating three of the best teams in the country to get to the national championship game. It just kind of feels so perfect. And I think my second power hour powerhouse goes to the college football playoff semifinal. We had a couple of duds in the college football playoff in the first and second rounds. We had some blowouts. We had so much conversation of, do these teams even belong in here? Should we even have 12 teams in the playoff? We got two all-time classics in the college football playoff semifinal, Notre Dame and Penn State and Texas, Ohio State. Four teams that have some of the most stacked and talented rosters in the country. Four teams whose reputations and brands bring a whole lot of cachet, but it delivered on the field. We got two really, really great games. And I think that we all needed that. Maybe some 12-team playoff non-believers needed that. And if we needed to have a few blowouts in the first and second rounds of the college football playoff in order to get two games like that in the college football playoff semifinal, I'm cool with that. Sign me up for it.
Yeah, and also real quick, we didn't get the Final Four that would have been the four had there only been a 4-team playoff, and we didn't get a national championship that was 1-2. So to your point, Carol.
Yeah.
That did not feel like a 5-8 game, Ohio State versus Texas.
No, that's because the power outage. goes to seeding. I mean, the power outage goes to seeding. Like, Ohio, we're going to sit here and talk all the time. And this is where context needs to matter too, right? Because for years, they're going to say, oh, well, you know, an 8 seed has won the national championship should Ohio State get there. Like, win it. An 8 seed has been to the national championship game. Okay. Well, the seeding was really bad this year. We can all agree. Yeah. Like, yeah, there ain't no way that Ohio State team was the 8 seed coming into this playoff. So, you know, we can power outage the seeding. But, hey, it doesn't matter if it gives us a great national championship
game. Yeah. I like it. I'm going to give you my power outage. Ryan Day haters. Time for them to get out of here. I don't want to hear it anymore. Texas, Oregon, and Tennessee. 3 wins in the college football playoff. This is a new era of college football. Ryan Day has 10 losses in 6 seasons as the head coach at Ohio State. So, I mean, I think he solidified his job as much as he possibly could. Ohio State is the most talented roster in the country. They're playing like it, and it is hard to collect talent and get them to mesh offensively, especially when you turn over part of your roster the way Ohio State did, and especially a quarterback, and man, they're playing well. Most dangerous team in college football right now, and I think will be the odds-on favorite to win the national championship.
I think we could throw out a few Texas-related power outages. Like, I think the play calling on second and goal from the one, that's fair. That is totally and completely fair to nitpick and critique and say Sark hurt his team in that moment. But overall, I don't know if I have very many Texas power outages. Like, I think for Texas fans,
I think the run game is still a power outage for Texas. Yet again, every game in the playoffs, they struggled to run the football. That's their running back struggled to run the football, not just quarterback numbers in that.
They ran it well against Clemson, but that's fair. They couldn't run the ball against an Arizona State defense that you should be able to run on. You know, against this Ohio State defense, not a lot of running games have been able to run on Ohio State's defense. So, yes, you're right. That needs to be the bread and butter of their offense, and they needed to be better in order to win this football game. But overall, I can't step away from it and say, well, you should have run 185 yards on this Ohio State defense. But, like, who can say that they have, at least in the playoffs? So I think it's fair to critique that. But overall, like, I don't feel like this is a Texas team that now all of a sudden the book is closed and they're going to be over the next few years just stuck in mediocrity. Like, they have one of the best defensive players in college football who's a true freshman coming back next year in Colin Simmons. You have Ryan Wingo, an incredibly talented true freshman wide receiver who's returning. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Arch Manning is going to be your quarterback next year. So it's frustrating to go back-to-back years losing in the college football playoff semifinal. But overall, like, you've got everything ahead of you next season. You're going to be, I think, right back in this position next season with the amount of talent that's returning for Texas next season.
Yeah, last thing. What do you think? I mean, Ohio State opens up as a 10-point favorite against Notre Dame in the national championship. I think that's a lot. I think Ohio State will win this game, but 9 and 10 points right now, that is Ohio State a 9 or 10 point team better than Notre Dame is?
I think Notre Dame, we got to find out where the health is on that defensive line, because obviously that's been part of their issue. If Notre Dame can be healthy enough on the defensive line, let's not get it twisted. Notre Dame's defensive strength is shutting down the pass, right? We all know that. They are going to look at that Texas game plan and be able to implement some of it. I think this is a close football game. I fear that Notre Dame doesn't have the playmakers to be able to keep up in what it could turn out to be. But 10, that feels like a beefy number going into this champ game for me.
That is a beefy number compared with the fact that it was, a 6.5 point spread at the most going into that Texas game. I don't think that Texas is, that much better of a football team than Notre Dame is. So I think 10's a little bit too beefy for me, but I'm with you. I think that Ohio State at least deserves to be, a several point favorite, but 10, maybe a little bit too much for us. But that's going to do it for us today. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by the podcast. He's Adam Brenneman. You can find him on Twitter at AdamBrenneman81. You can find Fitz at Jason Fitz. And I'm at CarolineFenton1. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe. Give us a review. Give us a comment. Listen to us on your preferred podcast platform. If you're listening to the Yahoo Sports YouTube page, always appreciate y'all for being here. So tell a friend about the podcast. Tell an enemy. Tell Ryan Day about the podcast, because he's given the biggest middle finger to all of his haters that you could possibly give. So we will be back on Tuesday to have a full preview and breakdown of the national championship game, Ohio State and Notre Dame. We are out.